Welcome to the Volunteer Youth Worker Podcast. Youth ministries rise and fall on the volunteers, so we are here to encourage and equip you. Join the conversation as we tackle the practical questions you are asking so you can help the next generation know Jesus.
All right, everybody, I've got Roger Reed here for this conversation. And Roger, you got to introduce people You got to introduce yourself to the people. And this is so thrilling, but I've interviewed a number of people lately from the East Coast. And so this is almost becoming like the East Coast Volunteer Youth Worker Podcast. But I love it because we got great ministry happening out here. So just fill people in. Who are you? Where are you coming from? And what's your ministry context like?
Awesome. Thanks, Jeremy. Yeah. So my name is Roger, and I am the youth specialist here at Hillside Baptist Church in Moncton. And I've been here now on staff for 10 years. Wow, that went fast. And yeah, I came here in 2014, but I started youth ministry back in 1994. And so I've been doing this for a while, full time. And I have to say, even today at this stage, I feel like I'm just getting started on what God's calling me to do.
Which is wild. So 1994, that's 30 years of youth ministry, which means you are not 30 years old. You're not 35. How old exactly are you?
I just turned 52 on May 7th.
A 52-year-old youth pastor.
Yeah.
That is a wonderful thing. You've been a youth pastor your whole career, correct?
My whole career, yes.
Right. Which is wild. So there's probably only a few, like I would think, in our country of Canada, like obviously Sid from our organization, right. He's in his 50s, been doing youth ministry. Harv is our OG. He's I think in his 70s, maybe. Yeah. I should know that. But there wouldn't be people that have actually stayed consistent in this kind of work. And so that's impressive. Congratulations on just that front. If you're listening and you're old and you've been doing this for a while, let us know because we want to celebrate you too. We want to know the list of the old youth workers in Canada. That's kind of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? The reality is the longer you stay in, I think the better you get. You know, I see so many young leaders and they're just looking for that exit. Don't look for the exit, right? Commit to longevity, you know, the long haul of youth ministry and get good at it. And it matters, right?
But yeah, it matters so deeply. But also, and this is not this conversation, but I'm guessing you've got stories of the cyclical nature of just how this works, where you're like, I thought we solved that back in 1996. And oh, I guess we're going to still deal with that today.
It's so true. You're still working with parents.
Right? Sure. Yeah. All right. Well, let's dive into a little bit of your context, because this conversation around student leaders and the things that we can do, even in our own ministries, kind of in light of what you're experiencing, like, I think this is going to be fairly encouraging. So why don't you just paint a picture of what ministry looks like at Hillside in terms of your youth leadership and your team? What is your gathering like? Fill us in on what people would experience if they were a high school guy joining your youth ministry.
Okay, awesome. So the one thing that we have done is, so when we came out of the pandemic, it was very easy for us to go back to the old way of doing youth ministry. But we had to realize society has changed, people change, everything was changing. And so what we did, we really shifted to something we were already doing, but making it better. And that is prioritizing Sunday morning. People were coming back to church. Students were coming back to church. And so we have a full youth service that happens every Sunday morning for middle school and high schoolers. It happens the same times as the adult service. We have two services, 9 and 11. And God has been really, really blessing this these moments within our youth church. So if you come in the door, you'll be greeted right away. You will not see an adult. You will see students. Students will meet you at the door. And if you're a first-time guest, so Jeremy, you're a 15-year-old kid, you come in for the first time, someone's going to meet you, someone's going to get to know your name, they're going to take you over to a juice bar, you're going to get yourself a free drink, and then we're going to figure out who is the best student to connect you with, and we are going to find you a best friend for that morning. And by the end of that day, you're going to feel like you've always been a part of what we're doing. We have incredible worship, we preach, and it's incredible moments in the presence of God. And so that's kind of what we do Sunday morning.
So your church has two services. So there's the two time slots and you run in both time slots a specific service for teenagers.
Just for teenagers. Yeah. So parents come in just like as you would go in and you would check your kid into, you know, children's ministry We have a component on Sunday morning just for a teenager, just for them. With them in mind, it's totally structured around a teenager, and it's really good. So adults have their place of worship, and the students have their unique place of worship. Right.
I'm sure isn't like enforced. Teenagers can still go in with the older adults to the bigger room. Is that true?
Absolutely. And we do have students that, you know, some students, they will go into the adult service with their parents. Some of them, it's because they're just trying to hide. But some other ones are just like, hey, this is kind of where I feel I need to be right now. And we celebrate that, and we know who they are. And we very intentional of finding them during the Sunday and connecting with them. And we see them in, like, you know, dark room faith, and we see them in their small group. So it's not like they're not connecting.
You should explain what dark room faith is, because that sounds terrifying.
Yeah. So dark room is something we started last year. It's actually a program you find online, dark room faith. And we just kind of took the room.
Which we can link. You guys didn't actually do the videos. You're leveraging the curriculum. Would that be the right way to say it?
Yes. So what we did, we did the curriculum for the first season, and now we just took the word dark room because people have identified with it. And now we just use dark room as our Sunday night high school discipleship moment. And the whole idea of dark room is to, you know, your faith is usually developed in the darkest moments of your life. So think about old school developing film, you know, in a dark room and putting the work in. And so at dark room, we ask big questions. For example, we talk about, you know, what does it mean to deconstruct your faith? Is it good? Is it bad? A couple of weeks ago, we talked about the ugly truth of pornography. It was a huge conversation. Last night, on our final closing, we talked about, okay, how do I date and how do I date well? And it was so good. And we bring in guest speakers who have experiences. You know, so it's an open space. We say to students all the time in that space, no opinion is wrong. You don't have to agree. You can disagree. This is a safe place. And if I disagree with you and you disagree with me, it's okay. We can still be friends, right? We're not going to lean into this new tolerance, but we're going to have old tolerance. That the conversations with these high schoolers have been so rich, and they're asking real, genuine questions. And a couple of weeks ago, one kid said to me, he goes, I've been going to church for a long time. So he was new there that night. And he goes, no one gave me permission to talk about how I feel, right? He goes, I'm always told this is what we're talking about. And he goes, tonight, I felt like I talked about something that I need to hear. It was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the Sunday night program. So this would be different structures. So lots of volunteers that are listening, you know, we're not necessarily going to, as you listen to this conversation, the goal isn't to advocate for a completely different structure, but it's helpful to know that structure, because now I want to get to know a little bit more about, okay, so in light of this, what's actually happening in your ministry? Because I've heard some of the stories, I know some of the families that have got kids in the ministry. It seems like the engagement of your students continues to go up. It seems like life change continues to happen. So maybe if there was like a highlight reel of what's going on through the youth ministry at Hillside, what would you say are a couple of those high points that are just really encouraging from the last, like, even 6 months?
Oh, wow. Okay. First of all, let me just be honest. I am so grateful for what God has been doing in this ministry, you know, and that He is favoring what we're doing, and it's Him. But I mean, we're seeing students really grow in their faith. I mean, since the new year, we've done 2 winter retreats, one for middle school, one for high school. Just huge numbers, right? But not only that, we're seeing full lives, right? And out of that, we're also seeing kids get baptized. Just Sunday alone, we baptized 19 students. We're having another baptism at the end of June, and we've got 10 to 12 students getting baptized. These are big steps. Kids just don't get baptized because they feel they have to get baptized. These conversations we're having with students, like, I'm generally living my faith out loud, and it's been so good. Another great story, a 12-year-old girl who just joined our music team, and just, wow, incredible. Not just her talent, but be able to give her a spot where we could just pour into her and see her grow and mature. Even like right now, we are developing a team of 17 students, and we're going on our first mission trip in 4 years. And just to see, you know, as they're crafting their messages and hearing their testimonies, what God has been doing in their lives, and kids coming up to me saying, hey, I've been praying this week, or I've been reading my Bible this week. And I'm like, wow, I didn't even know if you were serious about your faith. And here you are, you're telling me that, you know, you've been having these conversations with your friends at school, you know, and It's been very exciting.
Much. And then even from like a from like a numerical standpoint, like there are a lot of students. Like who how many all come on a Sunday to your youth church at this point?
Yeah. So on a Sunday morning, we can see anywhere to 183 students on a Sunday morning. Last Sunday, we said break 200 was our goal. And like, you know, everyone come to one service at one time, because that's the reality. If all the students that come every month would just come on one Sunday, we didn't know how that works, right?
Yeah, of course.
And so we're like, hey, let's aim for everyone coming to church on one Sunday. Let's see what can happen. And our goal was to hit 200. And so, I mean, we got the 270. I mean, we got 170. And one student said, like, hey, we didn't reach our goal. And I go, that's okay, right? I said, if you don't aim for anything, you'll hit it every time. And I said, so we constantly got to keep raising the bar. But it's just so good when you step into a room and you're not wondering if students are going to show up. They're showing up before you get there. Like, my student leaders are there before I'm there, getting things ready, organizing things, strong ownership of their youth ministry. And I talked to one parent. Let me just share this one. Talked to a couple of parents in our lobby, and they're like, and I'm like, so, hey, where do you come to Hillside? And they're like, it wasn't our choice, Roger. And I'm like, what? What do you mean? They go, no, our teenagers bring us here because they want to be in their youth church. And so we're here. And I'm like, hey, praise the Lord, right? You know,
absolutely.
And when parents are saying, I'm here because my kids dragged me to church.
Yeah,
you can't argue with that.
Well, yeah. So this is where I was from a numerical standpoint. So just knowing, again, for volunteers, this is maybe a little bit too in the weeds, but we know just from data across North America, you know, ministries, it takes a little bit of work, but youth ministries that are around 10% of what their Sunday morning overall attendance with everybody is healthy. And it takes work to get to that 10% mark. But my sense is that you've got probably like 15 to sometimes 20% of the overall attendance of what Hillside is seeing on the weekend. Would that be, is that true?
Yeah, easily. For example, I know the larger number. So from birth to 18 years of age, 30 something percent, that's the number that make up Hillside on a Sunday morning.
Yeah.
30 something percent is 18 and under, you know? So not only are we celebrating what God's been doing in our youth ministry, also what God's doing in our children's ministry.
Yeah.
Right. So,
the reason why percentages are helpful is because when you have as many students as you do, as a percentage of the overall church, what it's telling the story is that it's usually the case that you are now seeing, like you're just giving an example, students are now bringing their families. Students are actually leading the way. It's not that you've got, like if you have a church of 100 people, there'd be an expectation that there's probably a few teenagers in the mix. But if you started seeing in a church of 100 people on a weekend, a group of like 20 students gathering on a weekly basis, that would feel like, oh, it's not perhaps just the kids of the families that are here, but there might be something about them bringing other people or students hearing about this and being drawn in. And because of that, it just causes us to ask a few extra questions, because for any of us as youth workers, our hope obviously is that students would follow Jesus well beyond these moments that we're with them. And one of the great ways that that happens is when families, this is not the only way, but when families are actually bought in and connected. What I'm fascinated by youth church and the way that you do ministry is that it has an inherently built in this parent ministry program. You know, we think about like our youth nights, you know, drop your kid off on a Wednesday night. Well, when parents are dropping their kids off at youth church, they usually have to now stick around and go to church themselves.
Yeah.
And so you've built in, which is, I think, a funny way. I think you should use this if you don't. But like, hey, your adult service is like your parent ministry for your youth group, which is fantastic.
Nice. I love it. Yeah.
But okay, so let's just go to then this. I've heard you talk about this, like when you moved to town, I was here or I knew it or something. And so I've heard you kind of talk about this dream and this vision for a decade. So this is not an overnight success.
This is
10 years of knowing what you wanted to experience and seeing wins along the way. It's not like you're in the desert for 10 years.
Like a 10-year desert.
Yeah,
but
maybe a desert for a year or two.
Yeah.
But there were still good stories from those early days.
Yeah.
What about the experience is sparking students' steps in their faith journey? What causes them to actually come back on a regular basis, that there's more and more students showing up? what is drawing them in? Are you handing out, like, what are you giving them that does this? What's in the water? What Kool-Aid are they drinking, Roger?
You know, Jeremy, and I don't mean to sound super spiritual. We're just giving them Jesus, okay? Like, we're creating a church experience for the teenager, you know? That's
true, but we all are hoping that we're giving our kids Jesus. And so I just want to make sure, like, hey, volunteers, like, we all show up hoping that they get Jesus. But sometimes they get Jesus and they get, Grumpy Gus, who is, like, angry that they're, you know, making a mess in the back or whatever it is. Like, they get more than just Jesus when they show up to a program.
Right, yeah.
And so what else are they experiencing that seems to make the Jesus part actually rise to the top and that they're seeing and experiencing him?
Yeah, I think it's community. You know, I think community is really important. Like, we have this huge culture, and we talk about it all the time in our lead meetings. You know, we have to raise the culture of friendship, because the reality is, if a teenager doesn't have their friends and they don't feel welcome or don't feel seen, they're not coming back, right? Mm-hmm. No matter how good your program is, right? So, yeah. So we work very hard and very intentional to build a healthy community. So when a kid comes in, they feel connected. And some of the ways that we do that is, number one, like I said earlier, students meeting them at the door. We have a juice bar.
Okay, right? Let's slow this way, way, way down.
Okay.
So this is great. So I think this is where we're going to camp for a bit, because I think this is, I've heard this. I've heard this from parents. I've heard this from other kids. Like, the culture of friendship. So even just labeling that is so wonderful. I think in the church, we often, you know, use the language of community. You know, it's connection. You know, we see this in the New Testament, the idea of the body of Christ. But calling it friendship makes sense, because it actually moves beyond the spiritual language and makes it really practical. Hey, when you have a friend, you kind of know what that means. So you want your students, even the new students, to have friends in your program? Is that true?
100%. You know, okay. like when that new kid comes into our space, it can be a little intimidating.
Intimidating.
They come in and they don't know anyone. And we don't have this huge room, you know? So when you come in, it looks a lot fuller than it is. And there's so much happening, and there's so much excitement in the room, and music and everything else. So a new kid coming in who's has an experienced youth ministry on this level is like, wait a second, I don't know if I want to come in here, right? Yeah. So instead of a parent or an adult walking up to that teenager and trying to convince them to come in, we have these young student leaders who are trained to notice that. So I'll walk up, I'll connect with the parent, and this young student leader will pull the kid aside and go, hey, this is who I am. Hey, let me take you over to the juice bar and get you a free drink. Right? Because I know a group of friends here that you're going to love. Right?
And is that exactly the language that you've trained those student leaders with?
Yeah. Right. Like, you know, like, hey, I have people here that you are going to like. Right. And then and in the back of the room, I mean, we also have like our ping pong or foosball, basketball and stuff like that. And so it's like, hey, you like basketball? Hey, come over, shoot a few hoops with me. And so just those little things just to bring the anxiety down. Right.
Okay. So I'm going to go really practical, because this, I'm fascinated by this. And this reminds me, I know you, went to the school Thriving Youth Ministries,
Jenny Olsen,
not Jenny Olsen, but we love Jenny Olsen too. At the Cadre, you did Cadre, didn't you?
Well, you're talking about Jeannie Mayo.
There we go. Sorry. Yes. Sorry, Jeannie Mayo. She's not listening to this podcast, but, this reminds me of Jeannie Mayo, kind of things. Okay. So do you have your lineup of student leaders? Are they just like in a line ready to go? So there's always somebody waiting at the door. How does that work?
Yeah. So we have this check-in table, right? Yep. And there's two of them, and there's always student leaders. That's where they need to be. Right. Okay.
So if you're a student leader, and I want to know how you become one in a second. If you're a student leader at the start of the program, you are at, and so volunteers, think about this for a second. You've got your own students, you're connecting, you're doing your thing. This is wonderful. When new students walk in, what if their first experience was so warm and inviting that they were immediately making friends and connections? And what if that was sparked by some of your sharper students, some of your leaders, some of your student leaders? What if you gave them that kind of responsibility? So the check-in table is swarmed by student leaders. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they're not swarmed. Okay. Again, when a student walks in, we don't want them to feel overwhelmed.
Right.
We know our space. And so it's almost like this tag team, you know, and it's not perfect. I'm not saying this works perfectly every Sunday. There are times when you're like, who's at the table? And it's not because there's no one at the table, it's because they're now moving to that next part where they're navigating this new kid into connection, right? And so because we can see in between 6 to 10 new students every Sunday, right? Like it's crazy, you know. And some people are just and there's a lot of families right now. They're just kind of checking things out. That's a whole other conversation. So when a student comes in, our number one job is to learn three things: what is their name, what grade are they in, and what school do they attend? Because that helps our student leaders. Okay, they're grade six. They go to Harrison Trimble. Okay, they're in and this is their name. So right away we go, like, okay, here's the kid in grade six goes to Harrison Trimble. Here's our connection. So when that kid goes to school, like, wait a second, you're in my class. And we've seen that time and time again where kids were all of a sudden being introduced. I know you, right? Because Moncton is, as big as it is, it's not that big. And so all of a sudden, you know, when that kid all of a sudden just shows back up because they know that kid in their class is going to be there. So that really helps.
So that first connection with the student, so student leaders doing that, and then they're bridging to other people that those kids know. What else happens that just fosters that community or that friendship or that, you know, hope that students would find friends? Do you guys do anything else specific?
Yeah, we really try to work hard to get them into groups, right? So grade 6, 7, and 8, they have their home groups, okay? So we know that those are the most important years of really just forming good, healthy friendships within the youth ministry. Like, if you can get a group of grade 6 students really cement it within a peer group within their youth ministry, chances are they're going to continue to grow up through that peer group within that youth ministry, you know? And so we try to keep a lot of consistency in the younger group. And then when they get into high school, you know, we're working on some new ideas for 2025, but right now the whole idea is like, okay, so our middle schoolers, they're in strong community groups. You know, they're not surrounded by high school. It's like on a Sunday, like in their youth church. So we pull them out separately and then give the high schoolers their own unique space on Sunday night. And we create a lot of intentionality just to have fun in those moments, right?
Yeah.
You know, and get to know each other.
So community groups is like a separate program. It's something different outside of the youth church experience.
Yeah, but it enhances the youth church experience because we say to them, like, hey, we're glad that you're here, but if you want to grow stronger and get to know everyone better, you need to be in a home group. Home groups and dark room, it's where it's at.
Yeah. Okay.
Right?
Okay, let's go back to your student leaders. So again, volunteers are like, yeah, we've got lots of work to do in our program. We want everybody to feel welcome, but we have a group of mostly consumers. So all of our students are kind of consuming the program. And in some ways, they, you know, sometimes it feels like that's like because, oh, this is their thing. This is their safe place, this is their spot to talk about their faith, whatever the thing is. How do you get students to instead view this not as a chance for me just to connect with my friends, but for them to be invested in the experience itself? What happened to that? How do you do that with your student leaders? Where does that start?
Yeah. So, Jeremy, that's a great question because I think so many times in youth ministry, we feel that we need a high level of adult involvement. And you're right. We do need adult involvement. It's so important. Now, I got some incredible adult involvements in the youth ministry, but we got to realize something about Generation Z. They're super creative. Okay. They're innovators and they take ownership of stuff. Right. And so we've got to say, we just don't want you to come in and be entertained. How do we give you this ministry? And that's been my lens for as long as I've been doing youth ministry. How do I give this youth ministry to a teenager, right? Because they hang out where teenagers hang out, you know? They are the ones who are the biggest influence in their friends. I'm not an influence in their friends. When their friends show up, I'm a guy on a stage, you know? Like, I work the room, I say hi, yes, that's great, right? But I believe that the more we can empower students to own their youth ministry, you know, they're going to put the work in. You know, and so we get, there's a couple of things that we do in our student leadership team is, you know, like we celebrate the wins, but I give them permission to give feedback, you know, like huge culture of feedback because I need to know what they think. I may get them and go, this is a great service. And they're like, yeah, it kind of sucked, Roger. Right. Well, what do you mean? It's kind of sucked. Well, this didn't make sense. And this was, you know, because they know what they want, you know, and so we invite them in around the table. And I honestly believe our youth ministry is where it's at today is because we as adults, we just stepped back and we said, hey, how would you do this? You know? And sometimes they'll do things a little bit differently, but they know their friends, you know? And the proof is their friends keep showing up, right? You know, like, we don't have a youth ministry full of grade 7 and grade 8 girls. I mean, our high school boy culture is huge, yeah. You know? Like, we have young men coming in who are 16, 17, 18 years of age, and they're pursuing Jesus and are getting baptized,
yeah.
You know? And it's not because I reached them, it's because their friends who took their youth ministry serious reached them.
Yeah.
And I celebrate that.
Yeah, right? It's so interesting. It reminds me of a conversation, again, this was years ago, but it was from Life Church, with Vince Parker, which is on this podcast. You can actually go back and listen to it. But he was talking about how even at their scale, they're wild, like 40 locations and, you know, thousands of small group leaders. But their goal in their ministry is also to do, like you're saying, to give students a chance at experiencing the ownership of whether or not this ministry works. And so it's interesting to flip that switch, because in some ways that's our expectation for adults. Like, hey, when you show up, you know, obviously as a first-time guest, we're not giving you the guitar and telling you, okay, to connect and you lead everybody in worship. But that over time, that part of our faith is that you, if you become a part of this movement, that you're an essential part of this movement. You're a part of the body of Christ. You are mutually submitting and involved with the rest of us as a community. This is what Christ has given to us, the church. Mm-hmm. And so why do we gatekeep it for students so often and not let them assume some level of ownership? And I wonder, this is me just wondering, I don't have an answer for this for sure, but you know, I'm wondering, you probably have some questions around, well, hey, why don't you let intergenerational worship happen with high school kids? Like, you mean high school kids don't get to worship with seniors on a Sunday morning? And in your context, the answer is, I mean, sometimes, surely, but not often. But I wonder if that's actually okay, because instead you're allowing students to experience what it's like to own their faith. So when they do graduate, I would wonder if you actually have a stronger retention rate than ministries that do intergenerational worship all the time, because you're actually giving them a chance to experience what it's like to be the church now as a grade 7 kid, as a grade 8 kid, as a grade 12 girl, whatever that might be. That's just my guess, but I don't know if you want to respond to that or if that's what you're seeing or not.
Yeah, and I think, you know, eventually, and I don't like this when we say that the church of tomorrow, you know, because I really believe that we have an incredible Gen Zs and now coming up Generation Alpha kids who eventually they will be our senior pastors in our churches. You know, they will be our board members. They will be in that environment. Give them, you know, the next 15 years, a lot of things are going to change, especially in their life. And I want to be able to see a group of leaders, young leaders raised up so that when they are part of a church community, right? Like as an adult, as a parent, and they're asked to be invited to a team, they know how a healthy team should look like. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, yeah, I know how to work in this space. I know how to, you know, navigate through this conversation, you know, because they've been put in those places to have those conversations, you know, and mm-hmm. they understand what it means to lead a ministry at a high level, mm-hmm. right? You know, like I say to my student leaders all the time, if you don't do it, who will? Mm-hmm. Right? Like if you see a need and you don't do it, who's going to do it? What if I don't see it? You know, what if for some reason on a Sunday morning, I missed something, but you see it? I said, that's your opportunity as a leader to act, you know? And it's just been so good just to empower them, you know, and also to have some really strong key adult leaders who just comes alongside them as well and say, hey, that was really good. But can I help you to understand why you did it that way? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a correction. It's like, hey, let me help to understand why you felt that was the right approach. And let's see how we can maybe do that a little bit better next time, right? Mm-hmm. They're still students. They're still young leaders, right? And yeah. It's been so good just to see them just own their faith, you know, yeah. And own their ministry.
Yeah. And you know, if it was just hearing about the structure, somebody that's also been doing this, not as long as you have, but for a few years, I would wonder if the students are just filling the functions of like pulling ministry off, but like, is authentic faith development actually happening, like spiritual formation actually happening to those students? And so then when you're like, yeah, absolutely. Like we're, yeah. In the last 2 months, we'll have baptized like 30 students and, you know, kids are, you know, reading their Bible and kids are, you know, praying for each other and kids are going to retreats, all that kind of stuff. It's like, holy, okay. So there's something here about this. If you've got volunteers, Roger, that are listening and they're wondering, okay, in light of like, my structure is completely different. It's like, it's a Wednesday night youth group. It's an evening program. I'm a small group leader. I've got a small group of students. But I just want to try to move the needle a little bit from them being consumers of our ministry to actually being a part of contributing to it. Where do they start? And you might have to go back to like 10 years ago when you were, you know, with this vision in mind. What are the first few steps to inspire students to become a little bit more owners of the ministry? What does that look like?
Yeah, well, I like this because I think what needs to happen is that we as student leaders, 1 second, if I turn this off.
That's all right. We're the real deal here. This is the podcast where real life happens.
Okay, that's awesome. Right. Okay, so going back to your question, I think as an adult leader, you know, we need to say, okay, who is that student that's invested in my small group right now? Like, they show up every week, you know, and they seem to be ready for the conversation. So can we, or can you as the adult leader, start giving a little bit of ownership of your small group to that student?
Yeah, and what does that look like?
Well, maybe it's like, hey, simple. Like, would you be comfortable in opening up in prayer? No? Yeah. How about reading the scripture, right? Mm-hmm. You know, or hey, when students come in, can you just stand at the door and say hi? You know?
And you would ask them this, of course, before the moment, like what, without totally everybody before. Else asking, like, hey, John, you seem really eager here. Why don't you read this scripture? It's no. Like, this is like, bring them on the inside beforehand.
Yeah. And like, and then, you know, and even like, kind of meet with them and say, hey, listen, I'm working out on this small group. And last week we kind of struggled with this and this didn't work. What was your thought? Invite them into, see, so many times what we can do is that we give responsibility, right? Sorry, we don't give responsibility. We give a task.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, like I can say to a group of students, hey guys, I need you to stack those chairs. It'll get done. But why does the stack of chairs need to be done? So what I have done is say, okay, instead of me just yelling from the front of the room, we need to stack some chairs. I'm going to find a student and say, hey, you know, every Sunday, we need to get chair stacked. Do you think you could own that for me? You know, and give them the ownership. Like, hey, it's my responsibility to stack chairs, mm-hmm. right? You know, or to find a number of students to stack chairs. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing, you know. So look for those little opportunities where we can say, hey, where can I invite a student to partner with me for a greater impact? And I think that's the win, you know?
Yep. I love that. Where can a student partner with me for a greater impact? That's the quote poll for this episode.
Okay.
For sure.
Check. We got one in.
We're looking for the quote. We've been digging for it all for the last 30 minutes, Roger. No, I'm just kidding. But what I love about that is because I think for a volunteer, that's a question you can ask this week. You can ask right away. And what it does is it's also inviting the student to work with you. It's this kind of, we're co-laborers. And so we're still, as the leader, we're still shepherding them. We're just doing it instead of like from the front, we're trying to come alongside, or we're trying to invite our students alongside. So it's like, hey, as I follow Christ, as I do these things, where could you partner with me for this kind of greater impact? And then they get a chance to experience it along with us. So they understand how it looks and feels to be a Jesus follower as somebody that's in their mid-20s or mid-50s or whatever it might be. And I think that's just a beautiful picture. Instead of doing ministry to students, doing ministry with them.
Yeah.
And that's something that they'll carry with them. And I just think about, like, this is funny, it's not about my stories, but like my earliest memories of like church ministry are doing ministry alongside of somebody else. It was when somebody let me, you know, help them park cars out in the middle of the winter because we had a gravel pit and it wasn't, you know, there's no lines. And so I'm like, oh yeah, but it was Stephen Downey, mm-hmm. business guy in our church, you know, and he wasn't a youth leader, he was just a parking lot guy. But I remember that interaction. That was such an important, like, oh, this guy owns a business and he shows up early in the cold to park cars. Like, what is that? And over time, you get a chance to see that and experience it. This has been so helpful, Roger. Yeah, give them your thing. And if there's any kind of last minute things as we come in for a close here.
One of the things that I've kind of written down here and that I just kind of live by is students care more when we give them something to care about, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that's really, really crucial. So when we invite students into our student leadership team, and I use the word invite, it's not an open application. Mm. We invite students in. So our application says an invitation to join the team, mm-hmm. you know, as a process, right? But when they get in there and they start seeing everything, the first thing they say is like, wow, I didn't realize how much work went into creating this. Back to volunteers, if you're putting together, you know, a game or you're putting together a small group component, you know, and you invite a student in and goes, hey, this is the work that I put into it every week to hopefully get a win in our small group, you know, and they see the work, I think they start to understand, wow, there's some effort here. And I think that's the thing. I think this generation needs to see from us the effort that we're putting in, that not only are we calling, asking them to care, but they need to see that we care. Right. And we care enough to give it away, right, to help them raise the bar of their leadership and their potential for the gospel. And if you get teenagers reaching their friends as a small group leader, you're not going to be wondering, is anyone going to show up to my small group tonight? They're going to show up. Why? Because that small group, that student that you've been empowering is going to make sure their friends are there. Mm-hmm. Right. Because I'm going. You coming? It's going to be so good.
Love that. This has been super helpful, Roger. There's going to be lots of people listening. You got questions, concerns, ideas. You want more information. Obviously, there's lots to what you're up to, Roger. So I put my contact info in the show notes. Folks, you can always reach out to me and connect you with Roger. I'm sure he'd love to chat with you. But certainly really appreciate your faithfulness, Roger, but also your intentionality and your willingness to share with us today. Any final words before we kind of close things off here?
Yeah. Let's do youth ministry with excellence, right? I think we so many times, you know, we just fall into routines. If you're not seeing change, you're not seeing life transformation, you're not seeing growth, then you got to ask tough questions. Why? How come I'm not seeing those things? How come my students are not engaged? And put in the work and make your youth ministry great. It's your job. Right? I believe that. Right?
I love that. And as a volunteer, would you have that ownership and that care to be as intentional as Roger's invited us into? Thanks so much for your time today, Roger. We really appreciate it. And hey, we'll see everybody else the next time here on the Volunteer Youth Worker Podcast.